Big thanks to Indeed for sponsoring this episode of Past Gas. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PastGas. Just go to Indeed.com/PastGas right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/PastGas. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Big thanks to eBay for sponsoring this episode of Past Gas. Passion, drive, patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. We're talking superchargers, turbos, exhaust kits, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need for the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Le Mans 1991. Takayoshi Ohashi's Mazda Speed team had been chasing gold at the legendary endurance race for the better part of a decade, and the team can only watch on anxiously as the clock ticks past midnight.
Ooh.
The air is thick with nerves and the knowledge that, with a looming ban on rotary engines, this is their last chance. The race is now in the hands of the drivers and with the engineers that have crafted Mazda Speed's final rotary-powered race car, the 787B.
This is my time.
Ohashi and his team are transfixed to the number 55's Delta as its drivers desperately chase the leading three Mercedes cars from a distant P4. Roughly every 3.5 minutes, the nervous silence is broken as the distinctive four-rotor engine screams with a ferocity down the pit straight. Today on the final episode of Past Gas History of Mazda series, how did one of the most legendary race cars of all time come to be? How did Takayoshi Ohashi lead Mazda to become the first Japanese manufacturer to conquer Le Mans? And how has Mazda become the company it is today?
Past Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
Now, last week, you questioned my impression of the 787B.
I said,
is that your impression of the 787B? And I said, yeah. And it really messed me up for the whole week.
Whoa. I'm sorry.
You got in my head.
The whole week?
Yeah. I was like, really know how to make a four-rotor engine sound?
I don't remember doing that.
I had to sleep in it at his house.
Yeah. Wow.
He's like, let's go to the mattresses. I'm sad.
Jeez. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that'd be.
It was
so
pretty messed up. It was pretty messed up as a friend. On a friend level, pretty messed up.
But I want to hear your impression of it.
Ha ha.
Wahoo!
That's pretty good. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, dude, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
Yeah.
Good. That's good.
Welcome back to Past Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts across from me, James Pumphrey.
Hey, bub.
And
it's my new thing.
Hey, good. Bub.
I like it.
And getting ready for Deadpool starring Wolverine Jackman.
Hey, bub, get out of my face. How's the weather up there, jackass? Hey, hey, shh, how's the weather up there, jackass?
Joe Weber.
Keep it juiced.
What's up?
I haven't said that in a while.
No.
But I'm getting a new tattoo on Friday.
Are you?
I'm getting an artichoke on my arm.
Oh, wow. Okay. I almost sent you. I was at a Pottery Barn over the weekend.
Oh, yeah?
And there are a bunch of fake artichokes. Oh. I was buying fake flowers, and I almost sent you a picture of it. But when I went to get the fake artichoke out of the bowl,
yeah,
I knocked over a sign and got very embarrassed.
Oh,
so
no.
I abandoned mission.
Mm.
Damn, you get your fake plants from Pottery Barn?
I ended up getting it from Crate and Barrel because the Pottery Barns look too fake.
Mm.
Yeah.
I have a big update for you guys.
Oh, gosh. Whoa. Oh, yeah. You said on Friday when we normally record the podcast, Nolan was like, hey, I got a big thing to talk about. And we were like, we're not recording till Monday. He's like, I got to sit on this all weekend.
Yeah. And I'm proud of myself that I did.
What's up?
Big update for you guys and for the audience.
Okay.
I've been pestered about this ever since it was revealed on the show. I forget which show. I have finally seen Forrest Gump.
Whoa!
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Better late than never.
Thank you.
Came out in 1994.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
Yeah.
I saw it twice in the theater.
How many Rotten Tomatoes you're throwing at it?
Dude, that's a 10 out of 10 movie, obviously.
Wow. Dude, it's amazing, yeah.
Gary Sinise?
Oh, my God. Lieutenant Dan.
Lieutenant
Dan. Yeah, he's a fan fave.
Yeah, yeah. No,
people
he's
like
a character people like.
Yeah.
No, but man, what a great film.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I feel like an idiot for not seeing. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a lot of movies I haven't seen. Big movies.
Big movies.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, they have so much hype behind them, so much expectation that you're like, I don't have time to like devote to like really immerse myself in a movie like this.
I mean, it's a couple hours.
Yeah. I know, but it's like
maybe like an hour 40.
With Forrest Gump, I think
it's over two. Probably,
2 hours, 26 minutes.
Oh,
I
yeah,
because
he's got to meet Nixon.
He's got
to go to the moon.
He's got to play Alabama football.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got
to run across the U.S.
Run across the U.S.
Yeah.
He's got to go to Vietnam.
So I think next, I'm going to check out the Godfather movies.
Oh.
I haven't seen those yet. Those are long, too.
Those are long and also less digestible. Not that The Godfather is like hard to follow, but I think like a lot of movies from the 70s, you watch it and you're like, oh, movies were different in the 70s.
I love 70s cinema, dude.
Well, then you'll like this. Like 70s movies are...
I think they're the best.
Good.
I love them.
They're very macho.
I don't know. I love how movies from the era weren't afraid to like take their time with certain things and like get a little artsy.
It does.
Yeah, it does. Vanishing Point.
Vanishing Point.
Check that movie out.
Yeah.
That's
if you like Vanishing Point,
there's a whole side tangent where the guy just goes to like a dude's hippie farm and just takes acid, hangs out with this chick on a motorcycle.
It's like every
half
movie
an hour.
In the 70s. Yeah,
it's kind of a cliche.
Like that's like the New Orleans scene in Easy Rider.
Mm.
Like, oh, these guys are just doing acid.
Did the Warriors come out in the 70s or was that
Warriors
the
80s? Early 80s.
Early 80s. Still kind of like feeling that. I love the Warriors, dude.
Warriors is a good movie.
With that out of the way, how about we get into our part four here?
Oh.
The climax.
Part four
of
our four-part series on Mazda. The Forrest Gump of Mazda.
True. Yeah, true.
This is when he is about to, what does he do at the end there? He's running across. Yeah,
yeah,
it's Le Mans. It's an endurance race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is when Forrest just starts running, and he's running across the country.
Yeah. I think I'll just run.
Like 5 minutes in the movie, I told Chloe, I was like, this is like when I watch Borat. It's going to be Forrest Gump voice in the house for like 2 weeks.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Do you know that he...
Hi, Chloe.
That's how the little kid talked, and Tom Hanks is like, I'm just going to talk like this little kid.
I was shooting a movie in Branson, Missouri one time, and on HBO, they were showing Men in Black and Forrest Gump just like over and over and over.
Two wonderful films.
Oh, amazing. So we would like on set, like throughout the month, we would just get deeper and deeper with our Forrest Gump quotes.
Yeah.
They're like, I gotta go, Jenny. I'm double parked.
It's Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, it's Bert and Ernie.
Is he smart or is he?
Oh, it's heartbreaking. Because yeah. Then you're like, oh, he's aware of
one of the smartest in his class.
Yeah. This whole time, you're like, oh, he doesn't notice people making fun of him.
Right.
But then that moment happens.
You're like, he does.
And you're like, oh, wow, he does.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. There's different kinds of intelligence.
Yeah.
Emotional intelligence.
Great, great film.
Yeah, which a lot of men our age could probably learn a thing or two
from. Go ahead and watch Forrest Gump again. Give that a rewatch.
Yeah, maybe you frick off with this alpha and sigma life. Maybe a Gump.
Yeah. Gump mindset, dude.
Gump mindset, dude. Mindset. Yeah, dude. Wow. I'm a Gump male. Gump males, dude.
You could say I'm Gumpian in my philosophy.
I don't know. He seemed to secure a pretty decent bag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. That Gump grind set, dude.
I just ate at his restaurant a year ago.
Wow. Just a year ago. That recently, huh?
I could just talk about Forrest Gump for 2 hours.
Me too. Right. Let's do a Gump cast.
All right. Yeah.
Well, let's try to find ways to work it into the story.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's try and find natural, earned ways of making analogous comparisons to this story and Forrest Gump.
Sounds good. Okay. In our last
part four of Mazda, the finale at Le Mans.
In our last episode, we left off after Takayoshi Ohashi's Mazda Sports Corner team secured a P14 finish at the 1982 24 Hours of Le Mans, their first finish after numerous failed attempts. Mazda wanted to prove it deserved a place among the motorsport giants of Europe and the US and decided to buy a controlling stake in Ohashi's team. The team was then rebranded as Mazda Speed, and Ohashi was left in charge with one goal, to win at Le Mans.
Nice.
Ohashi and his Mazda Speed team knew that to take an overall win, they could no longer use production-based cars like the RX-7. Instead, they would need to build a Group C prototype like those that were dominating the top spots of the grid. And they had less than a year to build this thing.
Ugh, that's not a lot of time.
No, it's not. Given the time crunch, Mazda Speed focused on the engine and drivetrain and outsourced the chassis and bodywork to a Japanese company called Mooncraft.
That is such a sick name.
That's awesome. The resulting car was called the 717C, a stubby hovercraft meets Star Wars land speeder looking entry for the Group C Junior class, powered by the same 13B engine found in the RX-7.
Very Mazda looking. It looks, you could see some RX-7 in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's soupy.
Oh, yeah, this thing is stubby.
June Nikon livery. Sick. Love it.
The 717C pulled a shock class win at the 1983 24 Hours of Le Mans after its rivals failed to finish the race, and the car finished 12th overall. Unfortunately, though, the team went backwards the following year with a slightly redesigned 727C, finishing 15th overall and embarrassingly runner-up in their class to the BF Goodrich team, who used a Mazda Speed-built 13B engine under license for their Lola T616.
That is embarrassing.
That is embarrassing. That's like if you beat me in a race wearing my own shoes.
It's like when the kids make fun of Forrest Gump when he's a young kid.
I don't know if that was earned, Joe.
Right off the bat.
I forced it.
Right off the bat, you forced one in there.
I'm sorry for forcing it.
Yeah, I'm sorry for forcing it.
Oh, okay.
Really forested that one.
But at least I had the gumption to do it.
Oh, yeah.
The 84 effort had proven to Ohashi that the team was headed in the wrong direction, and he decided to bring in outside expertise to focus on building an entirely new car. Rather than rushing a new car design again, he gave the team 2 years to build their next entry. But instead of skipping the 1985 event, Ohashi decided to run another mildly updated car so the team's newly hired consultants from Allen Docking Racing, or ADR, could provide feedback on their preparation, management, and strategy. What are you chuckling over there?
Docking?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
ADR was chosen by Ohashi for their next experience in higher level racing, namely Formula 2 and 3, and for their ability to provide the team with a European base of operations. Very important. In the run-up to the 1985 Le Mans event, ADR sent their designer Nigel Stroud to observe Mazda Speed's efforts. Stroud had tons of racing experience, including jobs with Lotus and Hesketh Racing. We've talked about Hesketh before, I think, across multiple series like F1 and IndyCar. Stroud was just the guy Mazda Speed needed to evaluate their operations, and his first impressions of the company weren't great, guys. Stroud later stated to Motorsport Magazine that Mazda Speed lacked a good wind tunnel, quote-unquote.
You need that for sure.
Yeah, and that their engineers worked in dungeon-like conditions.
Oh, no.
And he bluntly said, maybe adding insult to injury, that their 1985 entry, the 737C, seemed horrible.
Ah, crap.
Stroud was proven right a few months later when he watched the 737C claim a dismal P24 at Le Mans. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Dead last.
That's like the Mountain Lion, RIP.
Oh,
P24.
Oh,
P22.
Yeah. Mm. I was like, there's not a mountain lion in Forest Gump.
For anyone that doesn't live in LA, there's a mountain lion that was named P22 that was spotted next to the Hollywood sign.
And he died.
He died.
So yeah, P24, that was dead last out of the cards that managed to finish the race overall. So not great. Reflecting on his first trip to Le Mans, Stroud noted the team's lack of urgency compared to what he had experienced in Formula One. Mazda Speed seemed to have little faith in themselves. And over the next few years, Stroud would prove to be a vital ally for Ohashi as the two joined forces to light a fire under Mazda and the racing team's ass.
Something bit me. Fire under the ass. You got shot in the butt in Vietnam.
And now time to pay the bills.
Big thanks to Shopify for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you're cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your little online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way up to did we just hit 500,000 orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. What I love about Shopify is that it gives you control over how you grow your business. This is the kind of tool that I'm looking for if I'm going to start a business. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gas, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gas now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gas. Thanks, Shopify.
Big thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing in your schedule is to know what's important to you and to make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. I think therapy is super important for everyone. I don't think anyone has all their stuff figured out. And I think BetterHelp is the best way to get into therapy if you've never done it before. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/passgas today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/passgas. Thanks, BetterHelp. Big thanks to Onyx Off-Road for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. Onyx Off-Road is the most trusted off-roading and snowmobiling app for those who like to travel off-pavement, find hidden trails, and camp where nobody's watching. Onyx helps you see what you're getting into with pictures, descriptions, difficulty ratings, and open and close dates. With three membership tiers, you're sure to find something that works for you. The free app includes satellite, topo, and hybrid maps, as well as the ability to track your trips. But upgrade to premium, and you'll be able to download unlimited offline maps, featured trails. But one of my favorite features on Onyx Elite is the ability to look up private land ownership. That means you can look up all the land that is owned and you're not supposed to go on, and then the rest is free to explore It's really a cool app. I use it when I'm off-roading. I think you should too. So check out Onyx Off-Road. It takes out all the guesswork from planning an adventure, even when your plan isn't so planned. Download Onyx Off-Road today to get a free 2-week trial of Onyx Elite.
Between the 1985 and 1986 Le Mans races, Mazda Speed was in a state of flux. Ohashi and Stroud had lobbied Mazda to invest more money into modernizing the team's resources and to improve the working conditions for their engineers. Better wind tunnel, less dungeons.
Yeah.
The team essentially worked in an ever-changing construction site as the new resources were brought in and changes were implemented.
Well, they still wanted the vibes of a dungeon, but not like poop everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. They wanted like Upper West Side sex dungeon.
Yeah.
Not
medieval
poop not literal
covered
medieval
dungeon.
Dungeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stroud later praised Ohashi for his leadership during this time, remarking on his creation of a good working atmosphere and his passion for racing. He also praised Ohashi's deep understanding of Western racing and his ability to bridge the gap between the two cultures. He later said to Motorsport Magazine, Ohashi understood racing more than the rest of the Mazda executives. He pushed quite hard for any development that Mazda couldn't really understand. I think that happens in any company-derived race team. When the top brass can't understand what the hell's going on.
Sometimes you don't want to push too hard, though.
You don't.
That's how you get hemorrhoids.
That's how you do get hemorrhoids.
Yeah.
You ain't got no legs, Lieutenant Dan. Forrest did that one.
Mazda Speed was also hard at work finishing their new car, the 757.
Hmm. Ooh, this one's cool.
Yeah, this one's cool.
This one's cool.
Oh, that's cool.
This one's
cool.
The most reminiscent of the 787.
Would I Bailey? Think. Well, it's not reminiscent of it because it came first.
It's preminiscent.
Preminiscent of it.
Is that a word?
Yep. Mazda was also hard at work finishing their new car, the 757, and a more powerful 450 horsepower, three-rotor engine known as the 13G to power it. The longer, heavier, and more powerful car meant a move up to the IMSA GTP class with a potential to crack the top 10. But the 757's debut was plagued with issues, possibly due to the changes happening around the engineers during the development phase. The team ultimately failed to finish in 1986. But with the help of ADR, Stroud, and the new resources Ohashi had lobbied for, Mazda Speed could make a far more successful return in 1987. It's like their kitchen was getting renovated, right? So they're not going to host the best dinner party, yeah. Naturally.
And
okay?
The contractors keep quitting on them.
Keep quitting on
it. New contractors, and then they go to Angie's List. And they gotta
get a new one.
New contractor.
Yeah, so it's like naturally they're not gonna throw the best dinner party of their lives in 1986, but in 1987, they'll have the new dining room, they'll have the new appliances, they'll have the new kitchen, and hopefully they'll have a better dinner party. Hopefully I put that into terms you guys can understand. On the surface, this new car appeared to be the same and even carried the same 757 name. But the chassis was completely new and was the first ever built entirely by Mazda Speed. The issues that had plagued the previous year's model had been addressed as well, and the 757 went on to score a class win and finish 7th overall.
Nice!
For the first time, victory seemed possible. Over the next few years, Mazda Speed refined its car and strategies. They went on a dominant run in the IMSA GTP class, winning the class for the next 2 years, and began running additional cars with different chassis and engines during the races to test their strategies, including the use of their first four-rotor engine, the 13J.
Mr. J.
But just as the team seemed to have found their stride, they were delivered crushing news. In order to align the top Le Mans class with F1 standards, the FIA announced it would be mandated the use of naturally aspirated 3.5-liter piston engines in 1991. Mm.
This would make the rotary the engine Mazda Speed was essentially founded on, and the engine that they had spent over a decade refining for Le Mans, illegal.
Whack. What's the point of that?
What does aligned with FIA standards mean?
Well, if I had to guess, maybe they also ran 3.5 liter piston engines in 1991.
Uh-huh. So they wanted to run similar engines.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. That kind of sucks, though.
Yeah. Oh, for sure it sucks,
dude. It makes everything so, you know, the same.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the point, is like regulating.
That helps. It makes it easier for the teams, though. Makes it cheaper. Because now they could probably, there's more engine options to buy out there. Nobody's spending money on engines that, like, people don't want to buy necessarily.
I think it's way more boring, though, because you're just relying on, like, the shape of your car.
Yeah.
The aero.
But it's not all. It's not like a spec engine.
Yeah, look at this. Okay, so
they're not running all the same.
I'm looking at the entry list for 1991 F1 season. All these cars. Honda has their 3.5 liter V12. There's also a 3.5 liter V10. Renault's got a V10. They're all 3.5 liter.
Yeah, so it's not
like a V8. Ford's making their DFR Cosworth V8.
Oh, yeah, so there's different engines. They just have the same like regulations.
Yeah. So it is. There's a lot of
variety.
And in theory, that makes it more competitive. Because more people can enter into the race because
someone's not going to make an engine that's a stinker necessarily.
Totally, yeah. But so it's kind of like, I think it specifically bites Mazda in the ass because they were like one of the only ones developing like, hey, you know what? We don't want pistons.
Yeah.
Like pistons are a pretty common choice for engines.
Most common.
Most popular choice for an engine.
Most popular type of rod in an engine.
Yeah, most popular blow-up mover in an engine. That's what it's called, a blow-up mover. What kind of blow-up mover you got in this thing?
Every time I'm stuck in traffic, I'm like, why are we all in this gigantic bubble powered by explosions moving 1 mile per hour?
Whoa.
You know?
Yeah, dude.
I'm like, damn, this is stupid.
Whoa. You know, Forrest Gump never smoked weed or anything.
Well, we don't see that in the movie.
No, we don't. I think we would.
I think he probably
would have maybe took a puff in Vietnam.
If they made it now, they would definitely be a Forrest Gump drug scene.
This is gas,
Aren't
Jenny.
They making a new Forrest Gump? Forrest Gump 2?
Are they making it?
Oh, no, they're making a Gladiator 2.
Yeah, right? Gladiator 2 is coming out.
There is a second book, though, and Forrest
And it's crazy. He goes to space.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Which,
cool.
honestly, in the canon of the movie, I mean, in the story,
well, how are you gonna
it's
hide
not that crazy. I mean, he does everything else.
I love Forrest Gump.
Looks like we need to take moon samples. Well, I guess I'll do it.
There we go. One small step for man, one giant leap for Dr. Pepper. The team had one final year to take it all with the rotary being legal. And in the fall of 1989, Ohashi and Mazda went into overdrive.
Nice.
Mazda spared engineers from its FDR7 project, including the chief engineer, to help build their fastest and most efficient car yet, the 787.
Ooh.
Ohashi then sought out a true Le Mans veteran to advise the team and convinced two-time F1 runner-up and six-time Le Mans winner Jackie Ickx to join Mazda Speed as a new team manager in early 1990. What a sick name.
What's yours, guys, is Ickx?
Piston
none.
Engines. Their chances looked better than ever in 1990, and the team was hopeful. The two 787s ran strong throughout the night, but in the early morning while leading their class, things began to go wrong. An oiling issue forced the first 787 to retire, and a few hours later, the second retired following an electrical issue. The team determined that both failures had been caused by excess engine heat. Mazda Speed could only look on for the final hours as a lonely and dated 767B carried on near the back of the pack. It eventually finished 20th, 55 laps behind the winning Jaguar.
Sheesh.
It was a total defeat, and it appeared their final chance with a rotary engine had been squandered. They had come too far with the rotary to start over, and the chances of Mazda financially backing such an effort seemed slim. The team must have felt a sense of loss and hopelessness when the race ended. It appeared they were done for good. But sometime later, Ohashi received unbelievable news. Because many teams were unable to prepare an FI-mandated 3.5-liter engine in time for the 1991 24 Hours of Le Mans, the FIA was forced to delay the requirement by an additional year. Ohashi and Modest Speed had to make a choice. Would they risk the potential disappointment and heartbreak of one final chance of glory? Of course they would.
Oh, I was going to say
got
no.
Got to, Jack.
I was going
to
say they weren't going to compete.
It was truly now or never. Ohashi went all in on big moves.
Nice.
At the insistence
that's
of Jack.
That's that Gump mindset. Yeah,
that's that Gump mindset. All in, big move, baby.
Big moves. All in, big moves. Gump. Gump, dude.
At the insistence of Jackie
too
Hicks.
Too dumb not to.
That's right. Stupid is stupid.
Too dumb there. Not to, dude.
Let's go.
Let's invest in that fruit company, baby.
At the insistence of Jackie Hicks, he abandoned their partnership with Allen Docking Racing. Okay. They poached Stroud and partnered with a new design team, Araka. Yeah.
Get that shrimp, Gump.
Get after, that shrimp, Gump.
After years of operating on a relatively shoestring budget, Ohashi sought additional funding by seeking sponsorship himself. He eventually landed on the Japanese clothing company, Renown.
Whoa.
Who insisted that their sponsored car have a distinctive orange and green livery.
Nice.
Stylized like an Argyle sock. Hell a livery yeah. that would go down in history as one of the most distinctive in motorsport. I did not know that.
I didn't know it was that based on a sock.
Makes so much sense.
It yeah. is so sick.
That's amazing.
And now I'm looking on Grailed for renowned stuff.
The design.
Me too.
The design of their new car, dubbed the 787B, was approached with incredible and obsessive attention to detail. Mazda Speed began by performing a sort of autopsy on the 787 and identified nearly 80 technical issues.
Wow.
Teams were assembled to address them all. The timeline was tight at roughly half a year, and the car had to be ready by the spring of 91 for an intensive testing program run by Oreca.
Oreca, we talked about in previous episodes
with the
Viper team.
Yes, sir.
Iconic Viper team.
Very iconic French racing team.
Yeah. Oreca, I barely even know why.
The list of demands were lengthy, and some were seemingly impossible. First, the chief of product development demanded that the engineers increase the engine's power by 100 horsepower up to 700 and simultaneously increase fuel efficiency by 10 to 15%.
That's a big order.
Yes, it is. He assigned engineer Yoshinori Honiden to lead the project. Honiden had the team working around the clock 7 days a week to accomplish the task and later said, all these young engineers sacrificed their lives. They ate nothing but prepackaged noodles. It was very painful for me to have to impose this on them.
Yeah, that sounds like dungeon-like.
Yeah, dungeon behavior. Against all
is dungeon
behavior. Hashtag dungeon behavior.
Hashtag dungeon behavior.
Is dungeon behavior the opposite of Gump?
Yeah,
I don't know if they're opposites, but they're not the same, that's for sure. Yeah. They definitely don't align.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Against the odds, the team delivered. In addition to adding a third, quote, trailing spark plug to address the unburned fuel issue, the engineers developed trumpet-like telescopic intake runners, which were continuously variable and lengthened and shortened based on throttle inputs.
That's super cool.
Imagine the ITBs on the Civic just going in and out all the time.
Dude, I think I would nut.
Yeah. If you saw that.
I think if I saw that, I would absolutely nut.
Not only did this improve peak power, but it also helped improve mid-range torque dramatically, making 95% or more of peak torque from 6,000 to 9,000 RPM. Wow, that's so crazy.
That is crazy.
The final product was the R26B, a 2.6-liter four-rotor engine with a 10,300 RPM redline. For Le Mans, the engine would be detuned from 900 to 700 horsepower for better fuel consumption and reliability, and would make 428 foot-pounds of torque with a 0 to 62, or 0 to 100 kilometers, in just 2.5 seconds.
That's fast.
That is fast AF.
But, dude, that's fast. And 428 pound-feet of torque in a rotary? That's sick, dude.
So rotaries don't make a lot of torque?
No.
And, like, the... You know, they had to go to the lengths of making those variable length intake plenums because, like, rotaries don't make a lot of power down low. That's why they rev so high. You got to, like, really rev the crap out of them. Like, that's why they're like, it's good for it to rev it out because it doesn't make any power down low. So with these, like, variable plenum things.
Yeah.
They were able to make mid-range power, which is like really impressive from a rotary.
I believe the reason I'm going to be speaking that term here. I believe the reason they don't
that's make what we much, do, man. That's our whole job.
Too much torque is if you look at like the version of a rotary crankshaft where it's just those lobes where the rotors are spinning.
The Doritos.
The cams that those guys are on.
Yeah.
There's only like an inch maybe of difference. So that's how much leverage there is on that crankshaft. Oh, it's very small compared to a traditional crankshaft where the journals that the pistons are on are spread out much further, a lot more leverage.
So that's what creates torque is like the leverage of
the twisting power. I mean, it's the twisting power of the crankshaft itself, the pistons pushing on that. And naturally,
and obviously if there's more leverage, then you have more torque.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I feel like I just understood.
Yeah.
Engines
so
right
if you
now.
Have, okay, you're like Donatello and you got a little sigh
real fast,
spinning really fast. That'll hurt.
That'll.
Or you can have a longer sigh
and just that spins
crack the shit out of not as fast and that'll hurt
like if
too.
If you're fighting Goro versus.
It's like nunchucks versus a sigh.
Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I'm thinking of a big ass stick.
Yeah, big ass stick.
Big ass stick. You can like break stuff.
Yeah,
open
big ass
with
stick
that.
Is a piston engine.
Yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
And nunchucks is a rotary.
When we were talking about like quick revving, like short pistons, they don't make a lot of torque because they can't have a lot of leverage versus a really long.
Because there is a ratio. Usually, if you have like shorter pistons, that's because the travel of the crank is much greater. Okay, so this R26B, it was placed into a car that utilized a full carbon monocoque chassis that Ohashi and Stroud had heavily lobbied Mazda for, which made the car stiffer and lighter and was a stark contrast to the steel and aluminum used by its main rivals. And finally, the car was equipped with carbon brake discs, which was a first for Le Mans.
Wow. So they were like, guys, we've spent 10 years developing this engine. We thought it was gone. They're giving us one more year. Yeah. LFG. All right. Let's freaking go, Bubba.
Let's go. The car was singularly focused on victory, with seemingly no accommodations made for those behind the wheel. Journalists who had driven the car over the years had remarked that compared to its rivals, it was almost claustrophobia inducing to drive. The windshield was unusually close. The roof was just above the top of your helmet, and the shifter was right up against your arm. A Japanese writer once likened it to, quote, Iron Manning yourself into a suit of car that doesn't want you there.
That's really funny.
That's kind of
it
sick,
doesn't
dude.
Want you there? Yeah.
Using Iron Man as a verb.
That's really funny. I just rewatched the Batman trilogy, the Christopher Nolan one, and it's really funny when he is he in the car and it transforms into like
the motorcycle.
But it's like the assault version where he's like shooting.
Oh yeah.
Before he comes out as the motorcycle.
Yeah.
And it's really clunky and it looks really uncomfortable to him just like sliding forward.
Also not necessary.
I know, it's really unnecessary because then it takes another 30 seconds for him to like come out of it so that he can drive.
I don't understand. We'll get right back to it, but first, a few commercials.
Big thanks to Indeed for sponsoring this episode of Past Gas. We are driven by a search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. I've done hiring in the past for Donut, and it is a pain in the butt. But if I had a tool like Indeed when I was doing hiring, it would have made things so much easier. Just their matching function is super robust. So join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/passgas. Just go to Indeed.com/passgas right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/passgas. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
But for Mazda Speed's drivers, including F1 drivers Johnny Herbert and Bertrand Gachot, and 1985 Formula 3 champion Volker Wiedler, the car was perfect. Gachot praised its linear power, delivery, and predictability, once saying,
"It wasn't twitchy or nervous as cause of that error could be. It was a strong and simple car, like a Forrest Gump. It was easy to drive, even though it didn't have a lot of downforce. And the engine was amazing, like Forrest Gump's legs. It was a bulletproof, like a Forrest Gump. When he got shot in the butt, it just thought, something beat me. You could not over-rev the thing if you tried."
In spring of 91, Mazda Speed shipped the completed 787Bs off to Eureka for testing, and soon the cars were running in 24 to 26 hour stints without issue.
Nice.
Wow. Then a few months before Le Mans.
What a fun thing that must be.
Yeah. That's a fun day.
Being part of a racing team and like, we're like, yeah, for the next 3 weeks, we're doing like 24 to 26 hour stints.
Yeah.
Like, I know what my job is. Sometimes it's boring, mm-hmm. but in a fun, chill way, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. You know, when you got a big project going on at work, and it's, like, exciting, mm-hmm. you know?
And it seemed like they are excited because it's competitive.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. working. Like, oh, yeah, everything's going well. We're doing 24 to 26-hour stints, no problem.
Yeah.
Things are going great at Eureka.
Then, a few months before Le Mans, the cars were entered into the All Japan Sports Prototype Championship under Ohashi's management, and in Europe in the FIA Sports Car World Championship under Ix's management to stress test the car and refine their racing strategies under actual racing conditions. The car was ready. But for all the incredible engineering that had gone into it, one of the most important contributions to the 787B's development was a political one. The media and the FIA alike had overlooked the team from the beginning, and the story leading up to the 1991 Le Mans was no different. No one considered Mazda Speed a serious threat, and when Ohashi convinced the FIA to allow them to run at the 830-kilogram weight they had the year before in the GTP class rather than the 1,000-kilogram minimum of their current Group C2 class, there wasn't a word of protest from rival teams.
Wow.
They had written them off.
Do what you want, jackass.
Yeah, basically. What?
Did you mispronounce Jack Ickix?
Despite their obsessive and intense preparation, when Mazda Speed arrived at the Sartha Circuit in June, they still had their doubts. Stroud later recalled, "We did everything we could to the car, and we knew it was reliable and everything was prepared properly, but I don't suppose any of us really thought we could win." The Friday before the race, a final strategy meeting was called. When it was Ix's turn to speak, he decided now was the time to throw caution to the wind and said to Ohashi, "Let's go balls out, all right?
Hell yeah, dude.
It doesn't matter if we crash or if the car doesn't last. The only thing I care about is if our balls are not in." Okay?
That's true Gump mentality.
Let's make a pact. Full Gump mentality. Balls out.
Go balls.
Okay.
Out,
let's run it like an Alabama football. Going balls out was a huge ask for the conservative Ohashi, but knowing this was truly their last chance, he agreed. Ix, the Le Mans legend, delivered the news to the drivers. Hey, we're all in agreeance. We're going balls out. That's the plan. Stroud later recalled their excitement when they were given the news and said, once they heard from Ix, it sealed the deal. To them, he was God. The race began at 4 p.m. on June 22nd, 1991. Mazda speeds number 55 and number 18 787Bs and the number 56 787 started from 19th, 23rd, and 30th, respectively, wow, after receiving grid penalties implemented by the FIA to favor the cars running their preferred 3.5-liter engine.
Man, that seems like a rule they just made up.
Yeah, yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they make all the rules up. Yeah, but
that rule section body.
Yeah.
As Ix requested, Ohashi gave the orders for the number 55, piloted by Herbert, Gachot, and Wilder, to go flat out, while the other two cars would run a more conservative pace.
Hmm, okay.
The number 55 started hunting down the front of the grid. Within just an hour, the Argyle pattern car had climbed eight positions up to 11th and kept up its furious pace. Gachot later said,
we were like rabbits. We took every curb, but we were confident that the car was going to last.
Nice.
By the fourth hour, the number 55 had made its way up to seventh place, and the coarse wail of the four-rotor engine had been seared in the memories of those in attendance as they watched the green and orange Mazda continue to carve its way through the field, knowing with certainty it was coming even as the light began to fade away. By the time night had completely fallen, the favored Sauber Mercedes team had taken a 1-2-3 lead, and driver Michael Schumacher, ever heard of him, had just shattered the all-time lap record by 5 seconds.
Oh, come Jesus on. Christ.
5 seconds?
Wow.
It's a long track.
That's a lot.
Five seconds?
Yeah.
That's wild.
That's wild, dude. That's Schumacher. That's that would Schumacher me crazy. Thanks to the 170-kilogram weight advantage Ohashi had lobbied for, it was pitting less frequently than its rivals. Just after midnight, Mazda overtook the last of the thirstier Porsches for fourth place.
Wow.
Let's go.
Around 4 a.m., after 12 hours of racing, Mazda Speed had their first bit of luck. Schumacher's Mercedes had been forced into the pits by a gearbox issue, and the Mazda Speed slipped into a podium position. At dawn, 2 hours later, the second-place Sauber experienced an engine failure, forcing another Mercedes retirement and bringing Mazda within a single position
of gold.
Wow.
Let's go.
They're now in second. The sun continued to rise higher into the sky as the number 55 furiously attempted to catch the lone Mercedes. Johnny Herbert was behind the wheel, and from the pits, Ohashi and the team noticed the Mercedes was losing some of its pace, which was later revealed as an attempt to control a cooling issue. Herbert running a little hot now, are we? Oh, not looking so good.
You're sweating a little bit.
You see me in your video.
Herbert drove maniacally and was nearing the end of his stint when, with just a few hours to go, the final Mercedes unexpectedly rolled into the pits. Ix took to the radio to ask an exhausted Herbert to do a double stint to ensure they took the lead. On a depleted water supply, little sleep, and a pain in his right foot caused by an injury doctors once believed to be career-ending, he fought to make up the four-lap difference as the Mercedes team worked frantically to solve their cooling issue.
Wow.
The Mazda team watched on with bated breath, eyeing the Mercedes paddock and Herbert's Delta, slowly counting down every time he shot down past the grandstands by the pits as Herbert slowly erased the Merc's three-lap lead.
Ooh.
As the number 55 made its third approach since the Mercedes had pitted, the crowd began to roar.
Let's go.
Herbert rounded the final chicane, floored it down the straight, and took first place with the rotary screaming towards its red line in front of 230,000 spectators.
Damn.
The goal that had eluded the team for over a decade was now in sight. Stroud later said that the final 3 hours after Herbert took the lead were the longest of his life. Finally, at 4 p.m. on June 23rd, Herbert crossed the finish line. The pit erupted with joy as years worth of struggle, heartbreak, and hope released all at once. Ohashi and Mazda Speed had done it, and Mazda became the first Japanese manufacturer to ever win Le Mans, a record they would hold for 27 years.
Wow.
They had done a circuit record of 3,064.7 miles in 362 laps, averaging a speed of over 127 miles per hour. The number 18, 787B, and number 56, 787 finished 6th and 8th, respectively.
This is kind of like how in Forrest Gump, the hurricane takes out the other boats, so they're the only boat that's left.
Oh my God! Whoa. Looks like going balls out works. Huh?
Hey, let's make a pact right now.
Okay.
From now on.
Yeah.
We're going balls out, boys.
Balls out, boys. Go!
Balls out.
The balls out, boys.
The balls
That's
out.
That's a sketch.
Hey, we're the balls out, boys.
Hey,
of
welcome
course
to
we
Bob.
Do the gizzy, glitty.
What?
We're, we're the balls out, boys. Of course we drink Prime Energy drink.
Balls out, boys.
In the midst of the celebrations, there was a conspicuous absence. Johnny Herbert ended up missing the podium ceremony after he collapsed from dehydration and exhaustion while being helped out of the car. And was sent to the medical facility for fluids. I know what that means.
Oh, I need my cum.
Well, he was going balls out for so long. Yeah, he needed to be
balls
drained.
Balls out for so long.
Yeah.
So get this man some cum. He's all out. He's all out of cum because he's such a... Frickin' dude.
He came so hard when he crossed the finish line.
Yeah. His scream was heard over the rotary engine.
Yeah. In addition to the heroic final stint by Herbert, the team owed a tremendous debt to the engineers. Okay, this is where we thank the editors. In the days after the race, Mazda dynoed the engine and then tore it apart to assess the wear it endured. And what they found surprised them. The R26B had only lost 2% of its power, and they believed it could have easily gone another 24 hours.
God.
The car itself had only a single failure throughout the event, a blown light bulb.
Wow.
Wow.
Mazda Speed returned to Le Mans the next year in the MX-R01, which featured the familiar green and orange renowned livery and was powered by an FIA-mandated 3.5-liter V10. The car led the race for a short while and eventually finished fourth. Had the team kept at their Le Mans efforts, another victory did seem possible, if not likely. Instead, the team, exhausted and having accomplished what they set out to do, took a step back. Over the next few years, they mostly went their separate ways. Mazda Speed was, in effect, a part supplier for small teams like REMEMEA for a few years, before outfitting cars like the Lantis for Mazda's race efforts in the Japanese Grand Touring Car Championship. But Mazda Speed remained relatively quiet through the 90s, as did their parent company. While the FD RX-7 and NA and NB Miatas were wildly successful as sports cars, they weren't able to keep the lights on at Mazda on their own. Japan was undergoing an economic recession, and Mazda's lineup of vehicles struggled to stand out amongst their competition. In retrospect, those cars really stand out, but at the time, like, everybody was making sports cars, as noted in our Japanese sports car episode.
Yeah,
about
that was a good time.
A ton of them.
In 1999, Mazda purchased Mazda Speed outright, and the tuning house remained effectively dormant for several years. Ohashi left the company a short while afterward and eventually became the team manager for Toyota in the All Japan GT Championship, currently known as Super GT. Here's a brief note on Ohashi's legacy. Takeyoshi Ohashi died on March 9th, 2009 at 67. The man who had set out in 1968 to bring attention and credibility to Mazda's new rotary engine had done so much more than that. He took the rotary to the summit of motorsport on a budget far lower than his rivals and proved that Mazda had what it took to hang with the racing giants of Europe and the U.S. Ohashi is remembered fondly for his kind disposition and warm relationships he had with those who knew him, from Mazda Speed engineers to the local villagers and event organizers at Le Mans that he helped develop a family-like relationship with. Ohashi was posthumously inducted into the Japanese Automobile Hall of Fame, joining fellow Mazda legends Tsuneji Matsuda and Kenichi Yamamoto. The inclusion of these three men speaks volumes to the contributions Mazda has had on Japan and the automotive world.
Mazda had decided that it was time to refresh their image. In 2000, they announced their Millennium Plan, a brand strategy that included cost reduction measures in the form of plant closures and job cuts. The strategy also included a shift in marketing towards a fun-to-drive ethos best known for its Zoom Zoom tagline.
Yeah. Creepy-ass kid.
Creepy little kid.
What's he up to now?
What's the Zoom Zoom? Dude, we should get this Zoom Zoom kid on the big three. Our new podcast, if you like this podcast, check out the big three. It's just like this, but more recent stories. Wherever you get your podcasts. Between the fall of 2002 and the spring of 2003, Mazda launched several cars still recognizable in its lineup today, including the Mazda 3 and 6. They also launched the rotary-powered RX-8, which kind of blew, and with additions like the CX series of crossover SUVs that launched in the mid-2000s. Mazda Speed made a brief resurgence in this era after Mazda R&D engineers in Southern California persuaded the company that this fun-to-drive rebrand was the perfect time to revive the tuning arm of the company. Between 2003 and 2013, Mazda Speed launched cars like the Protege MP3, the turbocharged MB Miata, and the Mazda Speed 3 and RX-8.
Look, it is marketing, the Zoom Zoom thing.
Yeah.
But I will say, I've driven a fair amount of Mazda crossovers, and you know, they do tune them, like the suspension geometry and everything, to feel pretty darty. And they're fun to drive.
Jim by a tie, man. I like the connection between rider and horse.
Yeah. CX-5. Mazda's great car. One of my favorite cars.
Driver's car. Yeah. Very driver-oriented.
Yeah.
And even the CX, I drove a CX-9, the big boy.
Big boy.
The Haas.
It has like a turbo in there, and still pretty fun.
The RX-8 was discontinued in 2012, marking the end of over four decades of rotary-powered Mazdas.
Wow.
The Mazda Speed 3 was discontinued a year later, and the Mazda Speed name has been dormant ever since. Mazda is undergoing yet another rebrand, this time focusing on a more upscale image. And like other manufacturers, has turned its attention mostly towards electrification. The rotary has since made a return, albeit as an electric power generator rather than the power plant for a sports car.
We talked about it in our new podcast, but I think it's kind of weird to just have like an alternator that's like a rotary.
Well, I mean, rotary engines are like famously terribly inefficient. But like when they're just spinning at low RPMs, they're somewhat efficient. I think Mazda has used that as
marketing.
Maybe that too.
Look, we're bringing the rotary back. It's just a iPhone charger now, but
I want to get a rotary generator
and just straight pipe it.
Yeah.
Why is your rotary so loud?
It's charging my phone. Mazda has kept its racing spirit alive with the Miata, now in its fourth generation, which has been the best-selling roadster of all time since 2000 and is the most frequently tracked car in North America.
ND Miata, phenomenal car. Love that thing.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Nowhere to put your stuff on the inside.
No, can't put the stuff very many
places. It looks so cool, too.
It's great. Yeah, it looks awesome.
It looks so cool for little people.
Jujiro Matsuda, Mazda's effective founder, sought to improve the lives of the Japanese people with the products that his company made. His son, Tsuneji, took the company to the next level when he introduced Mazda's first passenger cars, and alongside engineer Kenichi Yamamoto secured the company's future and independence, investing in the radical new rotary engine. Takayoshi Ohashi and Kenichi Yamamoto carried Mazda onto the international stage. Ohashi proved Mazda and their strange new engine could compete and win at the highest level with Mazda Speed and the 787B, and Kenichi brought the world Mazda's most brand-defining cars, the RX-7 and the Miata. Mazda's success lies in its ability to march to the beat of its own drum, and it has never shied away from quirky designs and a convention-breaking attitude to deliver cars and tech that meet the needs of the customer. Mazda said it best themselves, quote, "All of us at Mazda are adventurous at heart, with a bit of Rebel as well. We think differently and go further. We continue to break the barriers of convention as we take on the challenge of creating cars previously unimagined. The challenge drives innovation and creativity by bringing out the best in us. This audacious spirit has taken root throughout Mazda, from the design room to the factory floor. Boldly go where no wheel has rolled before. That's our winning formula.
Everything he said was like a different company's catchphrase. Yeah. Think different. Let's go further.
Boldly go where no wheel has rolled before. Go mindset.
So that was our series on Mazda. I think there's such a cool company.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just good cars.
Really good cars.
Good racing history. I like that the fact that they just trusted Bob Hall, like basically a salesman, to design a little roadster for them.
Yeah, that was a good little highlight. Met him last week. He was in the office.
Was he cool?
He was cool.
He seems like a character.
He was a character. Mazda is still an independent company. They still very much have like a small business mindset from what I've heard from people who work there, even though they're a huge company, worldwide company, but they're still independent. You know, I often,
which is like,
that's insane.
So, yeah. Really insane. Isn't
yeah.
It?
Yeah.
There's literally three companies that own every other company.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. And they're doing it on their own. You know, obviously I'd be sick to see like a new Mazda sports car, a new Halo car for the brand, but like realistically, like they don't, it's not like they have billions of dollars to freely spend on something like that.
I don't know. I see a lot of CX-5s out there.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. Yeah, very admirable company and very cool story. Joe.
We got some listener mail.
Listener mail.
This is from Logan. Go.
Logan.
What up, D-holes?
Okay.
Okay, chill out, Logan.
That's a deep cut, though. We were like 4 years ago, we were like, what should we call our fans?
The How about
D-holes? I like gassers.
Gassers.
A while back, I sent you guys a custom painted Hot Wheels replica of Locar. We still have it around. It appeared on an episode of the D-List a while back, but I haven't seen it since. Just wondering if it's still around or if anyone at the office has seen it since. This is the best picture I have of it. I was 15 at the time. Slime off a slug's back. Logan.
Yeah, we do still have it. We meant to put it in every video, but somehow that plan got lost.
I mean, everything gets lost here.
I'm pretty sure
it doesn't. Don't make them think stuff that's not true.
No. But there's so many directors and people doing different videos that things get misplaced.
We have a big shelf.
A shelf. It's on the shelf.
It's on the shelf in there. It's either in there or it's on the prop cart that's in the corner over in the studio over there.
Yeah.
It's around here somewhere.
There's one way to check to see if we still have it, and that's by listening to our newest podcast, The Big Three.
Big Three.
It might be on the coffee table. You don't know until you watch it.
You're going to have to find it. Making big promises here. Thank you so much for listening to our four-part series. Follow the boys on all social media at James Pumphrey, at Kentucky Cobra, at Joe G. Weber.
Yeah.
Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. If you'd like to, big thank you to our writer of this series, Audrey Holden,
for her
intense work on this. Big thank you to Christina Felsky and Gavin Kinzel and Eddie Esparza today. He's not in here right now, but he set up all these cameras. And
make sure you tune in next week. We're going to cover Hele Nice, the Bugatti Queen.
Ooh.
Really crazy story of this real wild gal who used to race Bugattis and bone dudes a lot.
Cool, man. Love it.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process.
Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.